Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
For the first time in over three decades, the economy of the USA is growing faster than the economy of China, casting doubts over the assumption that eventually China will overtake the current global leader. This strong growth in what is already the largest and most diverse economy in the world is particularly remarkable when it's considered that a large share of other advanced economies around the world have been more or less stagnant for more than a decade. But zoom in and get a closer look, and even within the USA, the story is much the same. A majority, almost two-thirds of US states, are not growing as fast as the USA itself. What this means is that just a handful of areas are doing a lot of the heavy lifting to prop up the world's biggest economy. And it's not just in outright economic growth figures either, which is where we get to Florida. Florida is home to the fourth largest economy within the USA, having roughly the same economic output as Mexico, Indonesia, or Spain. Impressive considering it's just one of 50 states that make up the union, but Florida has attracted the attention of a lot of economists for a reason other than just its sheer size. Florida is growing much faster than the other major states that round out the top four, California, New York, and even Texas, and it's doing it in ways and with industries that haven't typically been associated with the region's vibrant history. It's also gaining a lot of attention because that success may or may not be a net benefit to the USA as a whole, and to find out why, we must as always answer a few simple questions. What is driving Florida's rapid growth today? What are the potential problems caused by these growth areas? And finally, is this above average growth really sustainable? Once we have done all of that, we can put Florida, the fourth largest economy within the USA, on the Economics Explained leaderboard to see how it stacks up against other US states and entire national economies.
Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. On our show, we help listeners like you make the most of your finances. I sit down with NerdWallet's team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. We answer your real-world money questions and break down the latest personal finance news. The Nerds will give you the clarity you need by cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. We don't promote get-rich-quick schemes or hype unrealistic side hustles. Instead, we offer practical knowledge that you can apply in your everyday life. You'll learn about strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. And you'll walk away with the confidence you need to ensure that your money is always working as hard as you are. So turn to the Nerds to answer your real-world money questions and get insights that can help you make the smartest financial decisions for your life. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an eight-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. We'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
I want to start this video off a little bit differently with something of a personal anecdote, which I promise is highly relevant to the economic situation of Florida. Back when I was at university doing my undergrad, I had a part-time job managing a shop where the regional boss pushed me and all of the other stores to make as many sales as possible. Of course, that's nothing unusual, but one day, for whatever reason, my particular shop was allowed to put on a big store-wide discount for everything for one day only. To make the most of this and to keep our big boss happy, we called all of our regular customers to let them know about this in advance so that we could make as much money as possible on the day. Unfortunately, I actually got into a lot of trouble for doing this because all that really happened was that people did all of the shopping they were going to do at a discount in our store instead of shopping like they normally would at all of the stores in the area, which made us look good at the expense of the company as a whole. Now, don't feel too bad, my PTSD from working retail has mostly passed, but the point is, on a much larger scale, Florida might be doing the exact same thing and growing its economy at the expense of other states that make up the USA. The economy of a state as it exists today really got started as something of a tourist destination for people to travel to from colder regions on the east coast of the USA. While technically the region that went on to become the state was home to the first western city on the North American continent, it developed far slower than regions to the north, in large part because of its terrible geography. Even today, the state is full of swamps, mosquitoes, natural storms, and otherwise difficult to navigate terrain, so for most of its early history as its own state, it was just a place where people went on holidays, and even that was limited. This changed as railroads were built into the area, connecting its inland regions directly with major industrial and population centres in the north, which not only opened up the area to even more tourism, it started to make things like farming and even light industry possible. Today, these early industries still make up a significant portion of the state's total economic output, but they have been joined by a growing number of more modern economic contributors. The state has a surprisingly large mining sector, not digging for metals or fossil fuels, but one of the world's largest reserves of phosphorus, which is a naturally occurring chemical which is used primarily as a fertiliser. The USA has the third largest agricultural industry in the world, behind only China and India with their massive populations, and on a per capita basis, farming in the US is far more productive than it is almost anywhere else in the world. The phosphate dug out of the ground in Florida supplies three quarters of all fertilizer required by farmers in the country, which beyond just being a great revenue center for Florida, also means that the USA as a whole is a lot less dependent than most other countries on limited global supplies of this resource for their food security. Now, these are all very interesting, but it's not what has been driving the recent growth of the state, and those are more the industries causing controversy. Florida is a strange place, and part of its unique reputation comes down to the economic factors that attract people into the state from all walks of life. Florida has by far the highest level of net migration within the USA, and more people are moving to the state than even outliers like Texas, which has been making headlines in recent years for the wave of people moving there. Florida has gained almost as many new residents since 2020 as New York has lost, and unlike a lot of other states that have seen big increases in their number of new residents, this phenomenon isn't really anything new for Florida. Now, of course, a lot of that migration is just old people moving to the state to retire, which is why despite consistently high levels of internal migration into Florida, the population is still not growing as fast as a state like Texas, because, well, older residents die just as quickly as they move in. But the population is still growing overall, which compared to other major US economies like New York, which has been stagnant for more than a decade now, and California, which is going backwards, population growth of any form is a positive sign that there is something attracting more than just retirees to the state. A lot of Florida's new residents are young, highly skilled workers, and weirdly enough, both of these two groups are moving to the state for the same reasons. Taxes within the USA are charged on a national level as well as on a state level, which means that even within the same country, some people pay a higher rate than others because of where they live. Florida has no state income tax, which means people living in other states like New York and especially California can save a lot of money by moving there. For retirees, this is a good way to get their savings to stretch a little bit further, but recently it's attracted a lot of people in some of the state's newest booming industries. Low taxes, nice beaches, and a lower overall cost of living than centres like New York City, Silicon Valley, and Los Angeles is great, but Florida wouldn't have been able to attract some of the US's most skilled and productive workers unless there were jobs for them to do there. Fortunately, the state has seen a significant increase in finance and technology companies setting up major centres of operation, if not moving their headquarters there entirely. The highest concentration of international banks in the USA is not in New York City, it's in Miami. And likewise, a lot of tech companies have set up shop in the state's bigger city because of its relative ease of doing business. Of course, there have been some high-profile cases of business interests in Florida going head-to-head with government power, and instances like this can genuinely have an impact on how desirable a region is to invest, work, or set up a business in, but overall, Florida is still perceived as being much less restrictive than other major centres like California and New York. A large part of the reason why average incomes in Florida have been increasing so rapidly over the last decade is not because the state itself has become more productive, it's because already productive and highly paid workers have been moving there either to work remotely or to follow the large companies that have also moved there. While this has been a huge positive trend for the state itself, it hasn't necessarily been good for the economy on a national scale or even the people of Florida on an individual level. Now, we've covered the issue of capital flight and brain drain many times on this channel before, but we've never really explored it happening within a country, and in many ways, this is where it can be most intense. Now, as always, we don't want to repeat too much here, but brain drain is what happens when the most skilled participants in an economic region move from one area to another for better opportunities, leaving the region they are moving from worse off overall, because it loses its best workers, taxpayers, and possibly has to face skill shortages. If a tech worker moved from Silicon Valley in California, not only would California miss out on their tax revenues, California-based companies may not be able to find the workers they need to continue their operations, and eventually they'll have to move to where they can find workers. Now, a quick side note is that a reasonable assumption would be that the rise of remote work could combat this, now that there's no need for certain workers to be physically tied to a particular location. But the unfortunate truth is, it's too soon to tell. It has the potential to make the problem worse, because at least things like access to employment opportunities added some friction to productive workers moving to whatever state, city, or country offered them the best tax deal and living conditions. Without that, there is less standing in their way, especially if the receiving economy is happy to house them, which most normally are to wealthy and productive workers. It's probably not the most consequential example, but there's a reason why so many people with online businesses move to Dubai, and it's not because they're a fan of the architecture. Capital flight is similar to brain drain, but they are two distinct problems. Capital flight occurs when people pull their capital out of one area and move it to another area. Capital in economics really means anything that isn't land or labour and can be used to increase economic output. So tools, infrastructure, technology, materials, and of course, regular old cash. If people move, they tend to bring their stuff with them, including their spending money, which denies capital from where they're moving from and provides it to where they're moving to. This has been a major problem for a lot of national economies in modern history as moving internationally has become more common. Extreme examples like China and South Africa have even imposed restrictions on how much capital their people are allowed to take with them if they leave the country, because the exodus of wealthy citizens could otherwise have serious impacts on the economy. Now, within a sovereign nation like the USA, a country which famously values its freedoms, such restrictions wouldn't be possible, and this is why, in certain ways, capital flight and brain drain can cause even more serious issues. At this point, it's probably important to recognise that while a lot of people are moving to Florida from places like New York, California, and Illinois, in the past, dozens of other states across the USA had the same problem with skilled workers moving into the very same states that are now losing workers to Florida. The USA itself is globally the greatest beneficiary of skilled migration and foreign capital movements, so there is a level of irony to states like Florida and Texas now causing the same problems. But that doesn't mean those problems aren't real. Now, before getting into these specifically, it's important to note that the federation system of states that makes up the USA has a lot of advantages. Having multiple levels of government adds a level of control and redundancy to the national economy as a whole, making it more difficult for one bad policy, one bad leader, or even one bad idea to cripple the economy. It's not just the USA. Other federations around the world like Canada, Germany, Switzerland, Australia, and the Netherlands have all benefited from their system of giving a level of autonomy to distributed states, but this only works well if that level of autonomy is just right. Too much oversight and, well, it just becomes another unitary country with an added layer of bureaucracy, and too little oversight can cause the states within a country to start competing with one another, not unlike a certain poor student thinking they beat the system at their part-time job. If every state within the USA starts competing with one another to attract the most talented workers and most valuable industries, then it's just going to end up as a race to the bottom on regulations, tax revenues, and incentives. In a way, this is already happening, with cities fighting with one another to get companies to set up new headquarters in their metro area. Short term, this could be a boost to regional economic centres, but it will almost inevitably come at the expense of overall economic stability. Businesses, policymakers, and even economists love to hate them, but there are usually reasons why certain policies exist. What's more is that competition between supposedly united states can cause something of a feedback loop, where poorer states fall further behind richer states because talented workers move to areas where they can make more money and be surrounded by the lifestyle that wealthy people enjoy, and in doing so, they prop up the wealthy state at the expense of the poorer state. The wider that gap gets, the more pressure it'll put on highly productive people from poorer states to move to the richer ones. Extreme regional inequality will need to either be addressed with cumbersome and realistically politically unpopular interventions, or eventually it can get so bad that separate states almost need to be treated as two completely different economies. Now, the USA is a long way from anything that extreme for now, but it's something that shouldn't be completely ignored as its labour force and industrial centres become increasingly mobile. A problem this is causing right now, though, is that regular people who already live in states like Florida are finding it harder to keep up financially with the wealthy people moving in to enjoy the lower taxes, nicer weather, and comparatively cheaper living expenses. Governments at all levels should do what is best for the people they represent, and achieving economic growth and increasing incomes is a major part of delivering those outcomes. But when headline figures like this are achieved in ways that don't really improve living standards for anyone, apart from perhaps a select group of wealthy internal migrants, headline economic success doesn't always equate to genuine economic success. Okay, now it's time to put Florida on the Economics Explained leaderboard. Starting as always with size, Florida has a GDP of roughly $1.4 trillion US dollars. The small disclaimer here is that just like every other state within the USA, the World Bank and International Monetary Fund, the sources that we usually rely on for macroeconomic figures, do not produce data for states within a sovereign country, so the numbers here don't use exactly the same methodology. Even still, Florida's economic output is roughly equivalent to Mexico's, and if it was its own independent country, it would be the 14th largest in the world, so it gets an 8 out of 10. GDP per capita is $70,557, which is very good by global standards, and it's only improving. But despite all of its recent success, this number is still behind the average for the USA as a whole, which has a per capita output of $82,885, although that number is pulled up by just 17 out of the 50 total states and DC. Even still, this leaderboard ranks economies internationally where it would get another 8 out of 10. Stability and confidence is quite strong. It's a major state in the world's largest economy that uses the world's reserve currency, and despite the occasional political maneuver that makes headlines, the state is incredibly stable, which is in large part why so many major industries have been attracted there. It gets a 9 out of 10, only losing a point because of the internal challenges the state is facing and ongoing geographic issues like tropical storms, which can have a very tangible impact on the economy's future. Growth has been one of the strongest within the USA, which has itself been one of the fastest growing major economies in the world over the past decade. The economy has roughly doubled in size in the last 10 years, giving it a 9 out of 10 in this metric, even if that growth has come at the expense of other areas of the economy. Finally, industry. Florida, even for such a large economy, has a well-diversified economic base of agriculture, mining, tourism, and now financial services and technology. This is to say nothing of industries like construction, which are fantastic employers and have been booming thanks to new people moving into the state. Overall, the economy gets an 8 out of 10, again only losing 2 points because a lot of these industries still rely on the USA as a whole to feed them, rather than creating independent homegrown industrial bases. Overall, that gives the economy of Florida an 8.4 out of 10, which is exactly the same as the state of Texas, which despite having many of the same demographic characteristics as Florida, arrived at this particular score in a different and arguably more sustainable way. You should be able to click to that video on your screen now. Thanks for watching, mate. Bye.
The world is constantly changing and transforming. Cut through some of the noise with What's New with Wired, a podcast that goes in depth on the latest news and technology and culture. Their award-winning journalism will help you make sense of what's happening in the world. Listen to What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts. That's What's New with Wired wherever you get your podcasts.